All right, if we could have your attention, we'll go ahead and get started. My name is Dr. Karen Weaver. I'm a faculty member at Drexel. I am your moderator today, and I'm very pleased to introduce Doug Skipper, who's going to talk about the ballpark at 21st and Lehigh. Please welcome Doug.
Thank you. Thanks to the TIMAC chapter for a great convention and to the research committee, and thanks to all of you for showing up today. I hope you all got the chance to see Jack Rooney's presentation on the rooftops across the street. That was delightful, and George's on the Baker Bowl. Hopefully what we do here will complement and not duplicate what they've talked about. We've got 62 years that baseball was played on the site, so I'm going to go really quickly, show you a lot of things, and start off by talking about some of the earlier ballparks in Philadelphia, including the Jefferson Street Grounds, where teams from the National Association, the American Association, and then the Philadelphia White Stockings played there. They hosted the first ever NL game there, and Boston's Weston Fistler scored the very first NL run, the immortal Weston Fistler. Albert J. Reach brought what became the Phillies to Philadelphia, and they played at Recreation or Centennial Park starting in 1883. Oakdale Park, Keystone Park, Four Paw Park also hosted what were major league games at the time. The Phillies were kind of challenged, having a good run of success in the 1890s. They're playing at the, it was known as National League Ballpark, Huntington Grounds. It later became known as Baker Bowl, and it was located at Lehigh and Broad Street. In 1900, Van Johnson declares the American League a major league, places franchise in Philadelphia, and sends Connie Mack there. Connie Mack builds a new ballpark. It's located in the brewery town section, so you can smell the hops and yeast. He signed the top Phillies player away from his competition. He charged 25 cents for general admission, as the American League did. He outdrew the Phillies. And then he persuaded sporting goods mogul Ben Scheib, who was at the Reach Company. He promised that Reach baseballs would be used exclusively for AL games, and that's how they got Reach to, or Scheib to invest in the team. They built Columbia Park at North 29th and Columbia Avenue. When it was built, it seated 9,500, later 13,600, at a construction cost of $35,000, and it took weeks to build it. It didn't take a long time. Columbia Park was also used by the NL Phillies for 16 games after the NL Park stands collapsed, killing 12, as George showed. The Athletics had a short-lived football team. They used it 1 year. And then there was a Negro League team, the Philadelphia Giants, who played there in 1902, actually playing a night game. One particular thing, the players sat on benches in the field. There were no dugouts. The Athletics won two pennants there in 1902, but there was no World Series play. That was the year that John McGraw referred to the Athletics as a white elephant, a symbol that Connie Mack embraced for the rest of his tenure. And in 1905, both teams again won pennants. They met in the World Series, and the Giants won that 4-1. All five games were shutouts, including both games at Scheib Park. And Chrissy Mathewson shut out the A's three times in that series, two of those at Scheib. The crowds were overflowing there, and Ben Scheib went looking for a new site for a ballpark and located spot at 21st and Lehigh. Ground was broken there in April 1908. It was built at a total cost of $301,000 by William Steele and Sons. It was the first steel and concrete ballpark to open, meaning they would use reinforced concrete. And it started the classic ballpark era. Forbes Field opened later that year, and a variety of other stadiums opened over the next year, few years, including Fenway, Kaminsky, Wrigley eventually. Shy Park had a red brick exterior, French Renaissance architecture, and then there was a tower with a cupola that housed Connie Mack's office right at the corner of 21st and Lehigh. The first game at Shy Park was played April 12, 1909. The Athletics defeated the Red Sox 8-1. Philadelphia's catcher Mike Powers crashed into the wall chasing a pop foul. He underwent three surgeries and died weeks later from complications from the surgeries. The game drew a big crowd. More than 30,000 actually squeezed into the park, way over capacity. Another 15,000 were turned away. Of those who got in, 7,000 of them watched from the stands, or from the field, behind ropes standing seven rows deep. The 1909 Athletics finished second to Ty Cobb's Detroit Tigers, and Cobb's here sliding into Frank Baker. He's Spike Baker that was at Bennett Park in Detroit, and it touched off bad blood between the teams over the next several years. Mack had put together a strong contender featuring the $100,000 infield of Stuffy McInnes, Danny Murphy, Frank Baker, Jack Berry, and Eddie Collins. Murphy had been the second baseman when Eddie Collins arrived in 1908. Murphy moved to right field and it strengthened the A's at both positions. The A's won the American League Championship in 1910 and played against the Cubs. They defeated the Cubs 4-1. Chief Bender won game one, Jack Coombs won games 2, 3, and 5, and Murphy homered in game 3. In 1910, there were two World Series games that were played at Shy Park, and the tradition of sitting on the rooftops to watch the game had already started at that point. In 1911, the Athletics and repeated and got a chance to gain some revenge against John McGraw's Giants. There were long lines outside Shy Park prior to the World Series. And there were big crowds in Herald Square in New York. They gathered to watch the games from Shy Park on something called Playograph. Mack's Athletics defeated McGraw's Giants 4-2 in that World Series. Mathewson won game one for the Giants, but Home Run Baker hit home runs off Mathewson and Marquard, and then Bender won game four, and then the game deciding game six, which were both played at Shy Park. This is what the park looked like in 1912. As you can see down the left field line, the single deck of the bleachers there is not covered. In 1913, the Shy Park, the roof down the lines were covered over, and then center field stands, one level of those were added that ran from the left field foul line to center field. And you can see the covered stands in this view from the 1913 World Series when the Athletics and Mathewson's Giants meet again. Baker homered in game one. Mathewson shut out the Athletics in game two, which was played at Shy Park. And then Chief Bender pitched in game four and won. And then Eddie Plank beat Christy Mathewson at the Polo Grounds to cap the 4-1 series win. Athletics are back in the World Series in 1914, this time versus the Boston Braves, the Miracle Braves, who had been in last place in July. Before the game, as they were drawing big crowds, Philadelphia's finest are out there. They're all sitting on Heyer's root beer crates. This is a view of all the teletype operators, kind of the past day press box of sorts. They were sending out teletype notices around the country following the progress of the series. And again, there's big crowds inside the park to watch the Athletics play, and the big crowds across the street on 20th Street. Unfortunately, the Braves sweep the A's 4-0 in a stunning upset. And Connie Mack, facing the Federal League threat, he thought many of his players were looking at going to the Federal League. Tough economic times, the outbreak of World War I, He broke up his dynasty, sold Eddie Collins to the White Sox to keep him in the American League. Plank, Bender, Coombs all end up in the Federal League, and Baker eventually ends up with the Yankees. The Athletics spend their next 7 years in the AL cellar. And meanwhile, their crosstown rival, seven blocks away, the Phillies, are winning the NL pennant and outdrawing the A's for the first time. So Mac begins building his second dynasty during the 1920s. By then, the North Penn neighborhood had grown with homes and factories. There are improvements made in 1925. First and third baseline and the left field bleachers were double-decked and covered. Center field stands, second level was built, and that had a roof. There was a full-service 200-car parking garage under the 21st Street stands, so the left field stands. And on the down the right field line, there was a furniture store warehouse. There were other storefronts under the Lehigh Street stands. And at 20th and Lehigh, there was an establishment called Kilroy's, which later became Charlie Quinn's Rayfield Cafe. And the other fun note is that Jack Scheib, who was the more flamboyant of the of Scheib's sons, he raced motorboats and he stored them under the center field stands. And there were actually Scheib Park workers who were referred to as boat workers in the park. Mac rebuilt the A's into a competitor in the late 1920s. Ty Cobb, Tris Speaker, Zach Weed, and Eddie Collins all closed out their careers. But in the meantime, he was developing some great young talent, including Al Simmons, Mickey Cochran, Jimmy Fox, and Lefty Grove, who's shown here to the right. The Athletics' chief nemesis, of course, was the Yankees, who had won three straight American League pennants in 26, 27, and 28. The two teams are shown here marching onto the field for a game. But the A's had their own murderer's row, Bing Miller, Jimmy Fox, Al Simmons, and Mickey Cochran. And in 1929, they finally get past the Yankees and win the American League pennant, and this time they face the Cubs in the 1929 World Series. Herbert Hoover attends the games as he did in 1930 and 31 also. He's serenaded by chants of "We want beer" from fans who want prohibition repealed. Here, Rogers Hornsby, Hack Wilson meet Al Simmons and Jimmy Fox. Howard Emke wins the first game, the surprise starter, by a 3-1 score. The other two really notable games, game four, the Athletics are trailing 8-0, rallying the seventh inning for 10 runs. An inside the park home run by Muehlhaus narrows the lead to 8-7, and then Al Simmons homers and Jimmy Dykes drives in a game-winning double in the bottom of the seventh. That 10-run attack is now known as the Mac attack. And then in game five of the in the ninth inning, the Athletics were down 2-0, but Haas hit a 2-run homer, and Bing Miller drove in Simmons with the run that ended the World Series. There was more renovations done in 1929 and 1930, adding about 6,000 seats total on a mezzanine level. And the Athletics repeated in 1930. The rooftops across the street again full. This time the Athletics defeat the Cardinals 4-2. Rogers Hornsby and Eddie Collins meeting before the 1930 World Series, two of the greatest second basemen. And then in 1931, it's the same two teams again. Again, people lining the rooftops. Jack talked about how the prices had dropped as the Depression was going on here from 50 cents to 25 cents to sit on the rooftops. The Cardinals end Mac's second dynasty with a 4-3 win. As Pepper Martin, the wild horse of the Osage, runs wild. And in the 1930s, after the loss of the Cardinal, Mac again sells off his stars. Fox and Grove end up with the White Sox, Simmons goes to the White Sox, Cochran to the Tigers over the next few years. By 1935, the Athletics are in the cellar. They finish there 9 times in the next 12 years, and never finished higher than fourth in the American League for the rest of their time in Philadelphia. The Great Depression, falling attendance, lack of a farm system, all crippled the A's. Mack challenged the laws that prohibit the A's from playing Sunday baseball in 1932, and by 1934 the laws had been repealed. Prohibition was repealed in 1933, and the Athletics applied for a license to sell beer at the park. They kept applying the rest of the time that they were in Philadelphia and never got it. As the A's are falling, the Yankees return to prominence. June 3rd, 1932, Lou Gehrig homers four times in four at-bats at Shive Park. And in 1935, the Athletics build the spike fence, which shortens the right field line by a couple of feet, but its main purpose is to keep the people from 20th Street from watching the games for free and charging admissions. Spike fence is made of 22 feet of corrugated iron on top of the 12-foot high concrete wall that was already there. It's called the Great Ten Monster. The residents of 20th Street are no longer able to see into the ballpark or charge admission for that. They're bitter. Many of them blame Mack for financial difficulties as the Depression was going on. And one resident argues that he had to seek public assistance after the spite fence was erected for loss of income. The Athletics annoyed their neighbors further by adding lights to the park. First AL night games played at Shive Park on May 16, 1939. It was 8-3 to Cleveland. In the meantime, the Phillies leave the antiquated Baker Bowl and move to Shive Park on July 4, 1938. Phillies had used the park back in 1927 after 200 were injured when the left field Baker Bowl balcony collapsed, and one person died of a heart attack after that collapse. The Phillies pay the A's for each admission, but neither team's drawing well in the late 30s and into the early 1940s. A few memorable moments at Shive. Ted Williams goes into the last game of the 1941 season with a .3995 batting average, and rather than sitting out and taking the 400, he plays in both games of a doubleheader and goes 6-for-8 to raise his average to .406, the last American League player, our last Major League player to hit 400. 1943 All-Star Game played at Shive Park. Boston's Bobby Doerr clubbed a three-run home run to lead the AL to a 5-3 victory. Mel Allen and Red Barber called the game on neutral. 1944, Connie Mack's honored for 50 years as a Major League manager. 29,000 attend despite a transit strike, and Mack names his all-time All-Star team. Same year, FDR campaigns in the park. Shive Park also hosted boxing, City Series concerts, Negro League World Series games, and football. 1925 and 26 various NFL games played there. 1925, the NFL Pasto Maroons defeat the Notre Dame All-Stars, featuring the Four Horsemen. It was an unsanctioned game. Pasto was suspended, which gave the Cardinals a chance to win the NFL championship that year. The Eagles moved in 1940, played there until 1947. Most memorably, the NFL championship game, December 19, 1948, when Steve Van Buren scores the only touchdown in a 7-0 victory for Greasy Neal's squad in the Philly Blizzard. Van Buren wasn't going to come to the game, but Neal telephoned him. Van Buren took three trolleys, walked 12 blocks to Shive. Other players that were already there were helping shovel snow from the field. Eagles won the NFL championship again the next year in L.A. In 1957, they moved to Franklin Field. Meanwhile, the Phillies, big crowds are coming out to watch the young Philly stars, Richie Ashburn, Robin Roberts, Kurt Simmons, Del Ennis, Jim Constantine. And on the final day of the 1950 regular season, Robin Roberts pitches the complete game win. Dick Sisler hits a three-run homer in the 10th to win the pennant. However, the Whiz Kids are swept by Casey Stengel and the Yankees. DiMaggio homers in game one for the Yankees, and then Barra homers in the clincher at Yankee Stadium, and Whitey Ford wins for the sweep. The Phillies hosted the 1952 All-Star Game. It was a 3-2 NL win in a 5-inning rain-shortened game. Jackie Robinson homered in the first inning. The Mack family gained control of the A's finally after some family squabbling in 1950, Connie Earl and Roy. However, they had to take out a mortgage in order to do so, and that put them in severe financial difficulty. At the end of the season, Connie Mack had to step down as manager, retiring with 3,776 wins, 4,025 losses, both all-time records, five World Series championships. In 1953, Parks renamed Connie Mack Stadium, despite Mack's protests. And in 1954, after agreeing to keep the A's in Philadelphia, a few weeks later, the team is sold to Canton and moves to Kansas City. The Phillies move in, purchase the stadium reluctantly for $2 million, install the scoreboard in right field. The 60-foot scoreboard, is in play. The 15-foot clock is not. They draw big crowds in the 50s, but the deteriorating neighborhood the declining attendance causes them to start looking for a new ballpark. In 1961, 6 years after the Athletics depart, 5 years after Mack dies, Phillies are allowed to sell beer at Connie Mack Stadium, help raise money for the new ballpark. In 1964, the Phillies build a 6.5 game lead with 12 games to play. But they fold. The Phillies lose 10 straight, the first 7 at home, as Gene Mock abandons his rotation and uses Bunning and Short on short rest. The guy that had actually played well during that time was 1964 NL Rookie of the Year, Dick Allen, who was a very controversial star in Philadelphia, wore a batting helmet on his head to protect his head from objects being thrown. And one said, "I can play anywhere, first, third, left field, anywhere but Philadelphia." The Phillies accommodated him, traded him and several other players for Curt Flood, Tim McCarver, and two other players. Curt Flood ended up suing baseball, never ended up playing for the Phillies. And as the next few years went on, Flood disparaged the stadium. He was right. It was decaying rapidly. Finally, in 1970, the new park is ready, Veterans Stadium, and the Phillies host the Montreal Expos in the last game at the park. The Phillies win that game 2-1 as McCarver scores. People had come to the game wearing tool belts and carrying tools and started removing things before the game was even over. And one person carried away a toilet. A year later, this fiber alarm fire, which finishes destroying the field, the roof collapses. Park sits empty for 5 years and is finally torn down by wrecking ball in June of 1976. Today, the site of Deliverance Evangelical Church and Bookstore, and there's a historical marker outside on 20th Street. So, and the Phillies go to the Veterans Stadium after that, win their first World Series finally in 1980. Slugger Mike Smith's jumping up there along with the father of a famous country western singer. The vet imploded in 2004, and now it's Citizens Bank Ballpark. So just end up with words from Richie Ashburn. It looked like a ballpark. It smelled like a ballpark. It had a feeling and a heartbeat, a personality. It was all baseball. So thank you very much.
Inside park home run. Was that ever fixed to where the ball would come off there? Or did
not to my knowledge. I read about that, and it was in play, and it was a legal play. It stayed that way through the time the wall was out there.
I do recall you were mentioning that Sunday baseball was barred for many years. But when it was finally permitted, it was 6 p.m.
I'll repeat it. He was asking about Sunday baseball. Originally, there was actually a 5 p.m. curfew, I believe. It was later extended to 7 p.m. Because of that, there were suspended games. There, especially with the 5 p.m. curfew, there were suspended games that they weren't able to get in. Yeah, no one could start after 7 when it was extended to 7 o'clock. So that did hinder them. The MAC actually started playing the Sunday games there before the law was repealed. And he was threatened with arrest. The police came to visit MAC at Shy Park to tell him that he couldn't do that because there were people complaining that they were breaking the law. But he kept playing the Sunday games and the law was repealed. Other questions?
You mentioned that they finally got a prohibition to sell beer at the ballpark, but wasn't there still a prohibition on Sunday beer sales?
Yes, they still couldn't sell.
In the 1970s, though?
Yeah, the question was, when they did get permission to sell beer, was there a restriction on Sunday beer sales? And indeed there was. They could not sell beer on Sunday, as you said.
Yes. My recollection is you could bring beer into the park.
Yeah, and there's some pictures of people carrying bottles in, and one of the athletics arguments that they made was it would be a lot safer if they sold the beer in cups than letting people bring bottles in.
That continued with the can and the bottle sometime in the late 50s, and I was actually at a game with the Giants, a Saturday game with Cub Scouts. Fans threw flowers and cans of grenades. Mm-hmm. The following week, that was it. That was the end of the freezing stuff that didn't work.
Yeah, and I think they may have allowed paper cups to come in still, because I did see some pictures of that, but they did disallow bottles coming in. Okay. One more question, or?
The locals may already know this, but while wandering around, notice the plaque around 17th and Chestnut, City Hall, that A.J. Reach had his store there.
Yeah, the original Reach store, Sporting Goods store, was not far from here. Thank you, everybody else. I'm sure you're all anxious to get to the Philadelphia baseball discussion.